Hello and welcome to another episode of the How to Scale a Business podcast. My name is Hector Santiesteban and I'm your host for today. Our special guest is Mr. Bulent Osman. He is an exited tech founder and also the host of the Startup Sensations podcast. And excited to talk about the journey that is business. Thanks for being here, Bulent. Appreciate you hanging out with us.
Hello, Hector. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Catch me up. I know you've probably lived a couple of lifetimes, had a number of careers, but when someone asks you what you do and how you got here, how do you like to answer that question?
Well, in terms of what I do now, I love to help other startup founders to deliver their dreams and aspirations. I was very fortunate to build a SaaS platform. I started my business about a decade ago. I built it in the UK, which is obviously where I'm from, as you can probably tell. And we built up our office and our business in the UK. We also broke through into the US and had some large US customers. And I had a fantastic opportunity to move and live in Silicon Valley, just south of San Francisco, for about 18 months. And that was a brilliant experience for me personally. I was able to set up the US operation for my company, set up an office in San Francisco, and go out selling, you know, on the West Coast. I managed to sell some big deals on the East Coast. It was a very exciting journey for me. And then when we got back to the UK some 18 months later, and probably about a year after that, I was looking to do some fundraising. And of course, I approached a number of VCs on the West Coast and had a number of good conversations and was expecting one of them to probably offer a term sheet and suggest that they might invest. But to my surprise, they came in with a very generous offer to buy the company outright and clear the cap table. So I wasn't looking to sell at that point. I wasn't looking for an exit, but the opportunity just presented itself. And they were very generous with the multiples. And after some debate with my board and investors, we did decide to sell the business. And that was pretty much 5 years ago in 2019, just before the pandemic hit. Since then, I've been on the board of a number of tech companies here in the UK. I do quite a lot of mentoring of founders as well, sometimes informally, other times more formally. And as you briefly mentioned, last year I started my own podcast, following in your footsteps, Hector, taking inspiration from you. And I set up what is a transatlantic podcast, which we call the Startup Sensations podcast. And I have my co-host, who's just a little bit north of you on the Northern Californian coastline, just north of San Francisco, a wonderful lady called Shelley Bays, who's also an exited tech founder. And the two of us co-host the show. And we have US guests and UK guests. And we talk about stuff that you love to talk about, which is, you know, what is entrepreneurship all about? What are the secrets of success in terms of startup businesses? And we talk to founders, we talk to investors, just like you do. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
What a great story about, you know, there's a lot of accidental entrepreneurs. There's not as many accidental exited entrepreneurs. So I'm curious, when you look back on that first, let's call it success, that first business, in that exit, what were some of the things that you did well that kind of allowed for that to happen? What were some of the things that were in place that made them look at this and go, we don't just want to invest, we want the whole thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably do some good things. I probably made some mistakes along the way, as we all do. But I think if I look back at the beginning of the journey, what I was very conscious about was to do a number of mini pivots. I think there's no shame in trying something out, doesn't quite work, and then you pivot. And maybe that doesn't quite work, and you slightly pivot as well. So, I mean, I'm not talking about a complete change, but I'm talking about course correction, let's say. And I remember in those very early days, we did a number of, let's call them course corrections, because we didn't quite get the product market fit right. We probably didn't quite have the right minimum viable product initially, and the traction perhaps wasn't there. But then we had a breakthrough and we ended up closing a very big customer. And surprisingly, the first customer that we closed, first major customer, was one in the US on the East Coast. And it was a phone call that came in from this vice president for HR. And my assistant excitedly handed over the phone to say that some woman from the US wants to talk to you. And within a month or two, we closed that deal. And that helped us to become more enterprise grade in terms of our solution. So that was something, looking back, I think we did very well. Very cognizant of product market fit and not be afraid to pivot. And I think what that led to, it was a strong alignment between the solution we have to the problems we're looking to solve within our ICP, within our ideal customer profile, which was mid to large businesses. The solution was all about giving a voice to non-desk or deskless employees within very large businesses like retail and healthcare, et cetera, and hospitality. So these people are largely disenfranchised, don't get given laptops and phones, and don't have corporate email addresses, and are largely kind of forgotten. So we gave those people a voice with a mobile-first solution, which really was transformational for those businesses that had the vision and the culture to implement it. And I think, to speak to your question directly, what the investors who then bought our business saw was that alignment between solving the problem and the solution we had, and the momentum that we cut above our weight. You know, we punched above our weight. We're a small business, really. And yet I was able to close a large deal with Siemens Corporation in Orlando, Florida. Our biggest deal was a worldwide deal with Avis Budget, 32,000 users around the world. We even launched our app in Chinese in the top five Chinese app stores in China, because a lot of their employees are in China. So I think those are some of the things that were perhaps impressive for them, given we were still a small business.
You said something, and I'm curious if you already kind of covered it or if there was more to it. But when you talk about making your enterprise solution ready, what were some of the things that you did to do that? Was that just the app and the mobile sort of interface, or were there things internally that you adjusted? I'd imagine that you perhaps repackaged or you know, things that you were already doing, but all of a sudden tailored it for that enterprise level client.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at the end of the day, we had a vision for what the solution should do, could do, and how it may work. But there's nothing better than actually implementing it within a large business and then learning from that experience. So that first customer was really a partnership. And the way I was pleased that we cultivated that relationship wasn't really a kind of vendor-customer relationship. It was a partnership working together. She was a very visionary VP of HR. She had 18,000 employees and wanted to bring some innovation and something new and different to her business. So she had a vision, and it largely aligned, at least in principle, with what I wanted to do and what we wanted to do within the company. And so I said to her, look, you know, this isn't about me making a lot of revenue out of selling the solution to you. This is much more around this partnership. And I'm willing to devote some amount of the product development roadmap to satisfy solving of your business problems. Now, we didn't solve everything, because some of it was very parochial and specific to that specific company, which probably wouldn't have applied to other companies. But what I said to her is that where we may wish to do a development with you is where it has generic appeal. So I could take it to other businesses in your industry or other industries that have similar issues. And then I could, in effect, sell those features and those extra amount of capability to them as well. And she kind of broadly aligned with that. I mean, it wasn't perfect. There were times when she wanted me to build something that kind of really wasn't kind of appropriate. So, but largely we did agree on most things. And I think that really helped us to understand the language of enterprise companies, big businesses, especially in the US, interestingly. But of course, that applied to our bigger companies here in the UK as well. And I think that really gave us a boost in those very early days.
Yeah. I'd imagine that when you are mentoring or advising some of these other companies that you're working with, is that something that you're helping them to think about? Or do you lean more towards creating enterprise level solutions rather than solutions for low ticket sort of solutions? Is that something that you carry into the businesses that you're advising now?
It's probably more my experience, Hector. That's probably where I spent the majority of my career. Before starting up my business, I worked in enterprise software companies, some large ones that you would have heard of, like Microsoft, where I headed up sales for the Dynamics division of Microsoft in the UK. And before that, when I was an enterprise sales guy myself, working for Oracle, I used to sell kind of enterprise systems and compete against SAP, for example. And that was a lot of fun in those early days. And we won some and lost some. But so I suppose my background is very much trying to solve business problems using enterprise-grade software. So inevitably, that's where my experience and passion lies. But of course, there are a lot of transferable skills to other business models. So it's not to say it's completely black or white. A lot of what I believe in, I think, applies. And some of it is really about mindset of an entrepreneur. It's about the personal qualities. It isn't just about the software you build. It's about how you execute, how you go to market, what the culture of the business is, how you treat people. What sort of a leader are you? Are you a leader of people and people are willing to follow you and work night and day for you, you know, to make sure that the business grows, especially when you're bootstrapped? And so it is broader than just the solution to a particular problem.
Yeah, this is fascinating and something that we've definitely not covered before. Bulent, when we get back from break, I'm curious if you've got any pillars or foundations or key steps, because I think that there's a lot of businesses that are out there and they're perhaps toiling away, scrapping for these smaller deals, whereas if they could go out and sign one of these larger companies that you're talking about, that could really change a large outlook for them. So I'm curious if there are things that you might suggest to them. And we're going to get into that right after this quick break. Hey, y'all. Today's episode is brought to you by Amplify Media. And we are a podcast and content creation company. Well, we like to think of ourselves as a platform builder because chances are you have a product, a passion, a mission, a message, something that you want to get out to the world. But you might not have the time, the team, or the tech skills to get it out there. Well, if that's the case, we can help. Go to amplifymedia.com. That's amplifymedia.com. You can also check the show notes for info. And with that, let's get back to the episode with Bulent. Bulent, I'm curious, from the outside, are there other advantages or other opportunities for a business when they start to think about their offerings and their positioning this way? Are there some other not so obvious benefits that come along with kind of structuring your services in the way that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. And when I mentor other founders or speak to other leaders and maybe discuss some of their challenges, a lot of it really revolves around their mindset. And I think the concept of a founder's or a leader's mindset is really important. It isn't, as I said earlier, it isn't just about the product and the market you're serving. It's about how you approach it and how you execute. The biggest sort of maybe mistake that I see founders make, especially if they're scrambling and working incredibly hard to grow a business, is that they go after everything because cash is probably tight. You know, they're probably a bit worried about paying the payroll or paying the bills. They need the revenue. They're working very hard to win every piece of business. And sometimes I think that's a mistake. And let me explain why. Because at the end of the day, you win and the business wins and grows when you're passionate about your particular area of expertise and the market that you're trying to serve. So you need to understand who your customer is, who your ideal customer is, ICP, ideal customer profile, and be very disciplined about going after those customers and try not to get distracted with selling elsewhere. In my enterprise career, my corporate career, I was a sales guy for a number of years and then a sales leader. And I've had the privilege of working with some very elite level salespeople, enterprise salespeople. And one of the things I learned from them, which helped me to become successful, is that it isn't about saying yes to everything. It's about the power of saying no. And the elite salespeople are really, really good at saying no. No, I'm not going to chase this deal because it isn't in my sweet spot. No, I know I need to close some deals because I need my numbers, but no, this is not really right for me or the business. And being super disciplined about that, even though it's tough, it's actually an important thing to do because what that means is it leaves yourself open. You have more space, you have more time, you have more mind share, you have more energy to devote to those that you say yes. And in effect, what you've got to do is to think about, is this opportunity worth my time? What is it about what you've said to me or your interest in my product or our early discussions that makes me feel this is worth my time? Now, you don't say that because that sounds very arrogant and, you know, you don't wish to be rude. Of course not. But you need to feel it and think it. And then you need to qualify people in or out and set the bar very high. So I think it's about focus And a lot of businesses go after many, many markets. And really what they should be doing is focusing on, with a laser focus on one or two very narrow markets. I think that's an important one. I recently had a call, a meeting with a founder who said to me, Balint, look, really excited. We're going after all these four industry sectors. There's so much opportunity. The TAM is amazing, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, you're doing it wrong. You need to switch off these floodlights that he shone onto the playing field, right? Switch them off and get your little laser light out and shine your laser light in one particular part of the field. Okay, hold it steady and just go after that. Just go after that and make a breakthrough and penetrate that market. Because if you do that well, the other markets will come your way thereafter. So I just think that that's one of the key things that people make mistakes on. And it's tough to do, but eventually it works.
Yeah, the concept of niching down or finding your ICP is something that comes up frequently. And it seems to be something that it's never like you're really done, but it's more of an evolution of it. Because once you're done, how do you evolve on that or refine it even more or create, like you said, enterprise level? It's more of a focusing as opposed to a widening and a broadening.
Correct. Correct. And if an opportunity falls out of your focus, just say no to it. And that's tough, right? Because you need the revenue and you want the cash, but you have to be super disciplined. And if you are, success will follow you. And if you're not, you'll continue to be on that treadmill. And it's tough.
Yeah. Looking forward for founders, there's so much, it's so easy to get caught up in hype or trends or new tech or updates and iOSs. And there's so many shiny objects that can pull a founder away from their core, the one thing that they're supposed to be doing, in other words. For you, are there things worth paying attention to? Are there things worth noting, or are there kind of macro sort of maxims that you think are worth noting for founders out there right now?
Yes, I do. And the world keeps changing around us, you know. So you start your business, you have a vision, you have a passion, you build a minimum viable product, you get those early customers, and you begin to make some progress. And that's all very exciting, but that takes time. And during that time, the world changes around us. Technology changes, society changes, expectations change, the market evolves, things go in fashion and go out of fashion. And of course, now we're talking in the early part of 2024, where artificial intelligence is all the rage. We're all talking about ChatGPT and Gemini that Google has just released and various other things. And so the speed of change is only accelerating and has accelerated really in the last 15 months. So I go back to what I was saying earlier, and this was a decade ago when we, in the other part of my business, we did a number of mini pivots. And now those pivots weren't particularly for technology reasons, although we did redevelop our mobile app three times on three different technology platforms as that evolved 10 years ago. But I think it's important to be cognizant of what's out there. And especially with ChatGPT, it presents an artificial intelligence. It presents an opportunity, but also a threat. These opportunities and threats didn't really exist a year ago or 18 months ago, and yet they do exist today. So I think it is important the founders are very cognizant of that and assess where they are and try to defend against the threats and obviously grab the opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic stuff here, Balint. If people want to get more connected with you, go deeper in your world, where's the best place to do that?
Well, LinkedIn is the best place. So Balint Osman, that's B-U-L-E-N-T-O-S-M-A-N. So there aren't too many Balint Osmans around on LinkedIn. And I'm obviously in the UK. So I think if you put those parameters in, you'll probably find me. And if you look through, you'll be able to spot who I am. So I'm always happy to be connected and speak with people. And I have a podcast as well, which is weekly. So you may wish to connect with that podcast as well and listen to our guest as well. And yeah, feel free to reach out.
And the name of the podcast is The Startup Sensations. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. The Startup Sensations podcast. So you can search on any of your favorite platforms and you'll see a picture of me and Shelley. And our subtitle is Both Sides of the Pond. So on both sides of the Atlantic.
I love it. I love it. We'll link all that up in the show notes. I want to thank all you listeners for sticking with us and being here today. We would be forever grateful for a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know someone who's scaling a business or in the midst of this journey, hit that share button, send them a message, let them know you were thinking about them and this episode might help. And go get connected with Bulent, myself on LinkedIn if you're not already. And as always, we appreciate you being part of the tribe. We'll see you on the next one. Later, y'all.